The fact that a lot of architects don't want to realize is that everybody does good work. There's lots of really talented, really great people at architecture firms all across the country, whether they're four-person firms or 4,000-person firms. There's lots of good, talented people. So, and there's lots of great, talented design. So we need something to separate ourselves.
Are diving into an episode that is going to inspire you with tales of growth and scaling from one of our guests. Today's guest is going to be special because we hand select people who are actively building and growing their businesses, people who know what it feels like to be in your position. As a listener of this podcast, trying to figure out what your next growth steps are, and they're going to share with us those insights, that journey, and what they're doing right now to position themselves in a better place for growth and scaling. So check it out if you haven't done so already and subscribe to our channel. We are bringing some awesome business leaders into your circle, into your headphones, into your computer monitor today to show you what you can be doing to grow and scale your business. Share the love, subscribe to the channel, and at the end of this episode, to see what you should be doing next to grow and scale your business. Hey, welcome back to the show, and I'm so excited to have you here today because we're diving back for me into an industry that I was very involved with and kind of left behind, but I'm so eager to jump back in. Bill, will you tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure thing. My name is Bill Mandara. I am CEO and one of the partners here at Mancini Duffy. We are an over 100-year-old architecture firm based in New York City with offices throughout the country, including New Jersey, Florida, Arizona, and Washington. And cool. We are a growing firm and we're looking to keep growing.
I love it. I love it. Now, growing firms are fun because that means that you're not stuck in one niche and you're not stuck in one style. Talk to us about your company. What do you guys do differently than most architectural firms?
Well, there's a lot of different things, but I think, one of the initial things we did differently was that being at a firm in 2008 and 2009 that primarily worked on financial services clients and seeing what happened. Yeah, exactly.
You got the double whammy.
Yeah, he had nothing to do with that. Everything that happened back then, when my partner and I purchased the firm back in 2017, we wanted to make sure, and even before that, we wanted to make sure that we were diversified, our practice was diversified enough where if one particular part of the economy did not do so well, we were positioned enough to have other opportunities. So because of that, Mancini was typically known as a corporate interiors firm for a lot of financial services clients. We also do a lot of other types of work, and a lot of it has been organic growth. By way of example, one of our folks here started doing some airport work, and we now have a huge, in the last 10 years or so, a huge aviation practice.
Nice.
We also have an education practice that spun out of a couple of projects we did a decade ago. We do everything. We do industrial work. We've acquired a firm that specializes in healthcare, and we do a lot of that work. We do industrial work. We do life sciences work. We brought in an expert about 5 years ago that does life sciences work.
Wow.
We acquired a firm in Tampa, Florida that does a lot of residential work. So, and they do everything from super high end, houses custom that I'll never set foot into to multifamily and mixed use housing. So all across the board, one of the things we wanted to do is really truly diversify our practice. So, the idea is that we don't want to participate in a recession.
Fair. That's a good idea. That's exactly when I was in the architectural space is I was doing lunch and learns every week with architectural firms. And then all of a sudden everyone's like, we're not really designing anything right now.
Yeah. Your lunch orders probably got a lot smaller.
And they
went from like
100
sandwiches to like a couple of bagels.
Right. We went to bagels.
Yeah. Fair. I get it. And we also invested heavily in technology. We have software developers on staff. We have our own proprietary software that's really translates into our own process that we call our 360 process, where we strip back a lot of the pretense and a lot of things that other architects do. We strip away and we just bring, our clients are smart enough to get involved and we bring them right in, and we'll do what another architect takes 2 weeks. We'll get it done in 2 hours.
I love it. I love it. And that's because of your tech stack. Am I right?
Yes, we have, again, we have our own proprietary software, and we utilize that to bring our clients into the model and right into the process. And, you know, rather than sitting there spending an hour spell checking a presentation, we bring them right into the model and we walk them through an AR or VR, and they can take ownership of it and have full agency over what they're, what is.
I love it. Now you are brushing past a lot of details that I discovered about your company, and a lot of it looks like it is fresh and new, probably with your leadership in the company have evolved and developed these things. But the Mancini tool belt, I'm assuming is what you're referring to as your, correct, as your technology piece. That looks amazing. I mean, walk us through the why and the how, and has it paid off?
So the why is really because my partners and I, you know, I realize I'm not always the smartest guy in the room, and I always aspire to hire people smarter than me. And, you know, I've been successful in that, I can say. And we've had people come to us with ideas, and we always listen when people have ideas. And one of those ideas was, hey, let's start, gosh, more than 10 years ago, let's start using VR and let's start using, leveraging every type of technology. And eventually that led to, hey, let's take over this conference room and let's make it our design lab and let's bring people in. And before you know it, we've brought people on and here we are. And, you know, that's kind of the why is to differentiate us ourselves. I'm rambling a little bit. I apologize, but it's on any given project, we can be competing with a multinational firm that's thousands of people, or we can be competing with a local firm that's 10 people. And we need something to separate ourselves, because the fact that a lot of architects don't want to realize is that everybody does good work. There's lots of really talented, really great people at architecture firms all across the country, whether they're 4-person firms or 4,000 person firms. There's lots of good, talented people. So, and there's lots of great, talented design. So we need something to separate ourselves. And I think that
smart.
One of the things, I haven't had a lot of jobs. I've technically, this is really, you know, only my second job since I graduated college, but
love it.
One of the things I've seen through my career is that, you know, there is a certain air of how, I guess arrogance is the best way I can say it, architects can have sometimes. And when you strip that away and just realize, again, our clients are really smart people, they're really successful people, and they can, you know, if you give them the right tools, they certainly understand what we're doing.
So this is a tool set for your clients, not so much for other architects. Is that right? And I noticed it has things like tape measure, teleport. I'm assuming it brings you into some kind of VR into the job site or the proposed property and location, and changing paint colors on demand. Like, how does that work? What does that experience look like and feel like?
So it can be tailored to the client, but first of all, yes, it is a client-based experience. And
cool.
What it's meant to do is to kind of strip away some of the pretense and bring them in. You know, early in my career, I had done some projects where we'd show the client these renderings, and the renderings would be beautiful. Yeah. And whether they were done in-house or they're outsourced, you know, I had an old boss that would make sure the roads are always wet and it looks beautiful. And to the renderer's credit, they would make it look as beautiful as possible. What's a horrible experience is when the project is built and the client takes the rendering and looks at the space and say, hey, wait, this doesn't look like that.
It doesn't look the same.
Right. We don't want that. So by bringing people into the project early and bringing them into the experience, whether it's in VR or AR or a 2D experience where you're walking through almost like a first-person video game, they understand what it looks like. Because, you know, like I mentioned before, our clients are smart and successful people. However, they don't do what we do every day. Making that easy for them to digest is the greatest thing we can do, because that will ensure success and ensure that they understand what we're giving them. And doing that early on in this process. So you mentioned tape measure. We do a lot of a menagerie of projects. I didn't mention hospitality. We do a lot of restaurant projects. And for restaurateurs, it's very important to know the experience of the person coming to eat. And it's also very important for them to know how far are they from other people. And when you can walk through and feel it and then take a virtual tape measure and see how far is this seat table from the next one? How far is this person from another diner? And even from a chef standpoint, like how can I visualize, what can I see from those people, and how can I move across there? It's all meant to enhance the client experience.
Love it. Love it. I, you know, client experience is what I keep hearing from you. And I love that you're you're so focused on that because that is the framework. It's a foundation stone of building any business in any industry is that customer experience. Now, I'm curious, looking back, though, into your relationship with this firm. You mentioned it's 110 years old. I saw it was 1915 is when it was founded. And you're obviously, newer to the company. So
I'm, but you've been there for a long time. Let the record show, I'm 54 years old.
So you're not the founder.
But, no, not at all.
Just kidding. But I mean, as you've jumped into this business, and it sounds like you've only been with a couple of different firms, you started into this business as an employee. You worked Correct. Your way up. And then I'm hearing just through the conversation here in 2017, you and another, I'm guessing, member of the firm made a proposal to purchase the firm. Walk us through that. And why did you feel like that was a good move for you?
Sure. So I was part of a firm that was actually acquired by Mancini Duffy in 2011.
Gotcha.
I was kind of doing my own thing there. We had a 12-person office in New Jersey.
Nice.
And like I mentioned before, it was an 8, 9, 10, was not super kind to that firm.
Not awesome.
not awesome. Definitely not awesome. And then Mancini acquired that firm then. At that time, like a lot of my colleagues, I had taken a pay cut, and I was doing a lot of freelance work, so much so that by 2012, by the time I was at Mancini, I was kind of – I don't want to say I was going through the paces, but I was doing my job here. I was doing a good job. I was doing an honest job. And I was doing a tremendous amount of freelance work where I was kind of at that tipping point, almost there where it was like, do I go out on my own? I have a wife and two sons. I mean, they're both adult men by now, but at the time they weren't. Yeah. And it was a bit of a scary proposition. But I was really at that tipping point where I was, I was having a lot of those shower conversations with myself, where it was, what do I do? And at that point, Alf Mancini, who was one of the founders of the firm, had brought on my now business partner, Christian Giordano, to effect an ownership change of the firm. Ralph was retired. Ralph was a visionary, though, and he understood that, architects aren't always the greatest business people. I'm in no way saying the people that preceded me were not good business people, but it's hard.
Right.
There's a certain level of
left side, right side brain and it's hard to
an ownership transition of how do I transition from being an owner to being, somebody who's not an owner and doing something different is not an easy, on the old ego. Ralph brought Christian in and we actually became, if you've ever seen Step Brothers, where like they kind of like there's a scene where they instantly become friends. That was kind of what happened with me and him. And within 6 months of him being here, he proposed to me the idea. And this was in 2013. Do I want to join him in this journey to take over the firm? So I said, there was a lot of work that went into it. And
very cool.
I have to give so much credit to the previous ownership because we started having these conversations early on. And obviously it took a while to come to what would be an acceptable deal for both parties, all parties. But they really let us start to take over the firm well before we
Very
bought
cool.
the firm. So
Very cool.
We were able to look at the staff, look at the projects, say, hey, instead of turning a profit this year, we're going to invest a bunch of money into, computer equipment and software and all of these other things that invested in the future. So that's kind of how I got here. It was I find it interesting because when I did get to Mancini, I did not envision myself as a long-term person here. I was like, I'm just going to do my own thing.
They bought my 11 person firm. And now I'm just kind of part of a big wheel. Right.
Well, right. And it was, and actually it was part of like about a 50 or 60 person. I had my 11 person office in Jersey. It was part of a New York firm. But, within 2 years, there was like four or five of us left. And those four or five people were the people I brought in. So part of what tied me there, too, is a personal responsibility that I convinced these folks to make a move and come over. And I didn't want to just be like, peace out, guys.
Right.
But listen, as my mom would always say, there's a reason for everything. So,
well, that's very cool. So you guys negotiated the deal. The founding family, I guess you could say, the Mancini family was like, hey, this has been a great ride.
Ralph had already transitioned the firm in the early to mid 2000s.
Right.
And then the people that were left at that point, they were kind of like, okay, we get it. We see where this is going. And
Right.
we it was about a 2.5 year process or so that
very cool
that we went through. But there
and
again, they were super
point,
gracious, super gracious, and I'm forever grateful to them.
Well, I think it's cool. You maintain the name and you maintain the branding, and I'm sure that the name carries a nice reputation in New York
for sure
and New Jersey. But making the move to acquisition of other firms, walk us through that, and how did that timeline kind of work out into going to Tampa and then into Scottsdale, I think you said?
Yeah, Phoenix, Scottsdale.
Uh-huh.
I would rewind that back a little further. The first move we really made was in New Jersey. And okay. It's funny because to somebody, I believe you said you're in Utah, not
yeah.
in this area. We had done a lot of work in New Jersey. I've lived in New Jersey my entire life.
Yeah,
and it's,
beautiful
it's,
state,
it's,
by
it's,
the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I agree. It's also very much so, though, like even though you're 15 miles over there and there's just this
right.
little river that separates us, unless you have a presence here, like we would go to interviews and I would explain that, you know, hey, guys, this project is 3 miles from my house and I'll be there. And they'd be like, well, where in New Jersey is your office? And I'd say, well, it's in New York City. And they'd say, no, thank you. So our it was quite frustrating, actually. So our first move really was into New Jersey. And, you know, we kind of cut our teeth on that. And then we
yeah.
made another acquisition within New York City where we acquired a 30-person firm that primarily did healthcare. And
nice.
It did some residential work as well. And you know, like anything, you know, I went to architecture school. I had one semester of professional practice. They don't teach you mergers and acquisitions.
No, M&A is kind of a different animal.
No. And I had been on the receiving end of an acquisition. So I kind of knew what not to do,
right.
which is a bit of a theme in my career of, you know,
right.
kind of learning what not to do rather than what to
Welcome
do.
Welcome to the club, babe.
Exactly. So, you know, it's interesting you brought up Arizona and Florida because they're completely two different models.
Oh, yeah.
Phoenix,
They're both
Scottsdale.
Warm, but very different.
Well, they are, but even the way they happen, Phoenix, Scottsdale, we were actually looking for, we have an office, as I mentioned before, in Seattle. We were looking for a strategic hire there. And through that strategic hire, we had people out there trying to source that person. And they were asking questions about somebody. And they happened to ask a couple people in Phoenix, one of whom used to work for Mancini in New York, and they were like, hey, would they be interested in Phoenix? And
interesting.
Through that, it was really more of an organic growth where, I mean, they're both amazing people. They came to us with a fully baked business plan, and
yeah.
it was an organic growth where we were ostensibly hiring some people.
Right.
And it was a
they
lower
were
risk
already
investment.
There.
They were already there. Now
yeah.
that's grown. It's grown. They're amazing. They're an integral part of our leadership and our team, and they're kicking ass out there in Phoenix, and they're doing difference.
Love
but
it.
that was more of an organic kind of growth path. Where Tampa, we
right.
had sought, we had been seeking out a firm, and we found a firm, and they were ready. And that was a full on acquisition of again about a 30 person firm. But what's so amazing about that is that's what pushed us to about 140 people or so.
Love it.
And with that firm, we have different business units, but we also had two people that we didn't have before. We have an HR director and a COO, which has
right.
been invaluable to our growth as well. So we were
yep.
able to bring on
operations and
operation,
understanding
which
different tech stacks and different, yeah, how
100%
talks and backs up data and stores. There's a lot of stuff there, isn't there?
Oh my gosh. And it's been, and for me personally, it's been amazing having those folks come on as resources because they've made my job so much easier. Again, I'm an architect, you know, I only
Love
know
it.
What I know. And so it's been amazing, but to kind of like long story long, two completely different paths to growth.
You know, but explain why Tampa, why was it important for you to be in Florida? Were you just finding that a lot of your clients in New York had places down there and needed to trust someone down there? Or what was kind of the draw to there?
So that's part of it. I think that, listen, I mean, Florida is a high growth area.
Sure.
You know,
no doubt.
It's for, you know, I'll be agnostic for whatever reason, but people are moving out of places like New York and New Jersey and California and going to places like Arizona
You're kidding.
And Florida. Yeah. I don't know, go figure. And there's a ton of opportunity down there, as well as to your point, we have existing clients and
yeah.
existing relationships that carry down to there. Part of the reason too is that, you know, I what I don't want to be, I feel like we spend a lot of time building the culture here and building who we are. And we have
right.
a, you know, I think we have a great culture here that's evolved and changed over the years, but It's hard to maintain that culture if you're 250 people spread out on five floors in Midtown Manhattan, right?
Let alone in five offices in five cities.
Right. But if you move, if you have a series of offices of smaller groups of folks, whether it's in Tampa or Scottsdale or Seattle or Idaho, it doesn't matter. You can maintain those cultures. And we learned this in New Jersey with our New Jersey offices, where it's going to be a little bit different, and it should be different because different, but you can start to maintain that culture and you can still keep your soul kind of without just
I
being
get it.
this giant
Massive
monstrosity spread out,
multi-store.
of course, spread out a bunch of floors in Midtown Manhattan.
It probably helps with the bureaucracy feelings and emotions that people get into when it is a multi-floor boom, this is us, versus being spread out a little bit throughout the ecosystem. Is that
A
right?
thousand, 1,000%. I try to visit the other offices on a regular. I will tell you, I'm in New York City, which is where I generally go. I don't sit on a desk. I sit in a couch in the middle of office in the office because I want to be approachable. I don't want it
I
to
love
be
it.
like, oh, I have to go up to corporate on the third floor or something. We don't want that. We
I
don't
love
want that.
that. I love that. Well, having been a transplant from Seattle to Utah, I can tell you the exodus is real from places like New York and California.
It
And
is.
Arizona's a great place. Florida's a great place. I love all these places. I actually surprisingly had a client in New Jersey a couple of years ago and discovered that I loved New Jersey. I had no idea what a beautiful state that was outside of crossing the bridge. You know what I mean?
I
And so,
appreciate that.
no, I actually fell in love with the, I was there in the autumn. It was just gorgeous, gorgeous. Probably like right now. But I got to tell you, growth in a business is always strange, especially coming into a business that's been around for 110 years and now executing change that for whatever reason was never thought about or not ventured into very deeply until you came along. What has that done to the culture amongst the old folks, I guess you could say, of the older organization? And has that been a problem or have they been excited about it? What's kind of the feel there in growth by acquisition?
Listen, I think that it's always a it's always a challenge to make sure that folks that have been there for a while understand that they're val listen, like I mentioned before, I'm 54 years old, so I'm not exactly a youngling here,
Spring
but
chicken.
it's important to balance change and where we are, as well as to acknowledge the value of people's experience and what they bring to the table. So I think it's really all about a balance, and really, like I said, just keeping, just because it's obviously interesting right now with this, especially with, I have two sons that are Gen Z, and one of them just graduated college, and it's I find it funny because there's a lot of talk about that mindset. And as a Gen Xer, I find they probably have more in common with us than they do with the millennials.
I totally agree. For whatever reason, I feel the same way.
I think it's probably because, again, I have two sons that are 22 and 21, and they relate to me, and they were raised by us. I think that I actually have an easier time relating to the
Gen
folks
Z.
Gen Z than millennials. Not that I mean, I have plenty of millennials I love and respect, but I
Totally
almost
get
think
it.
there's like the millennial boomer connection and then the Gen X, Gen Z connection, and somehow it all kind of works.
It's because we raised them.
Well, 100%.
We
Yeah,
birthed them.
exactly. Like, yeah, I mean, when my kids got a participation trophy, I said, "No, this is nonsense." And they
This
said,
is
"Yeah, this is
stupid.
nonsense." And then, the boomers are like, "Oh no, here's your participation trophy." And the millennial was like, "Oh great, I have my participation trophy."
Well, at the risk of offending any boomers or millennials, let's move on.
Yeah,
Let's
sorry.
not.
Apologize in advance to all boomers and millennials.
We'll keep that conversation off the side. Just kidding. Now, Gen Xers, we were an interesting breed of people in the generation we were raised in. Anyway, we'll leave it at that. I like the parallels, though. It is interesting how the generation that you raised, you do feel much more connected than the generation that came in between. And I think that as you see this growth happening, though, obviously there's been mistakes. There may have
For
been
sure.
some decisions made. Walk us through one or two of those that you felt like, man, I could have done without that, as you've been trying to grow the business.
Listen, I think the biggest struggle that I've seen in my career has been getting people back in the office since
Ooh.
whatever the heck happened in 2020, right?
Yeah, that was weird.
And I'm not going to say we got it 100% right, but It's been a struggle with, again, and not to belabor it, but it does kind of go to a generational thing, and it's been difficult. And there's been, I would say, there's a lot of things we've gotten right, and there's a lot of things we haven't gotten right. And
Right.
but yeah,
That's fair.
that has been one of the bigger struggles that I've seen and participated in. Again, I feel that there is a, again, from some of the more Gen Z leaning folks, there's more of a
Yeah.
desire to come in and learn
Be
from their
part of something.
peers.
Yeah.
There's, and then, and part of it ties into where you are in life. If I was back when my kids were young, I probably would have wanted to spend more time at home as well. But that's, I think, where we've probably, we could sit here and have
Fair.
a whole podcast on that alone.
Let's not do that one.
No.
But I do say, I will tell you that like your growth journey is really cool because I love the
Thank you.
fact that a lot of people struggle with that when they walk into a company that has this established name, established reputation, they fear of making any strong moves because they feel like they don't want to tarnish the brand or tarnish the history of this company and its brand. And yet it feels like what you've been able to do is say, we do have a name. We do have a good reputation. Let's bring that other places because we can. Like, is that how you feel?
I do. And I think, listen, it's a privilege to be representing the Mancini brand, having known Ralph Mancini,
Yeah.
because listen, Ralph was a firecracker, man. And I'm
I
that's
bet.
put it that that's sugarcoating it a bit. But Ralph was
Yeah.
not afraid of change. Ralph
Yeah.
was bold. And when we do a lot of these things, we'll sometimes have conversations about, wow, Ralph would have loved this. And honestly, sometimes
Yeah.
we'll post things on social media and we'll get comments from some of Ralph's family,
I
which is
love
so
it.
heartwarming, and saying like, oh, he would have loved this. And
I love it.
I think that if we had been a company that was founded by somebody that was a little more straight, I don't want to
Crusty.
say straight laced, but I don't know how to say it. But again,
Crusty.
Ralph, yeah, R Ralph was a bold guy, and it's a privilege to be able to carry things on in his name.
Well, give us this because I think we've kind of hit our time and the history of the company and all that stuff, but I think that what you've done is a beautiful thing, and I feel like there's a lot of people out there who have considered acquiring the business from their founders, and they get nervous to even ask about it, nervous to even talk about it. Is there some advice that you could give to people that are looking at quote unquote the silver tsunami of retiring? People, the boomers wanting to retire and they don't know how, and the employees love the company, but they don't know how to talk to that person about it. Like, what advice could you give to someone who's thinking it, hasn't said it, but kind of how do they get that conversation going?
Just have it, man. Listen, I'm fortunate in that I was raised by my parents, and my dad owned his own business my whole life, his whole
Right.
life.
Right.
And I've never been, my parents were gracious enough to kind of enforce to me that there's never, it's always okay to say something or ask something. The worst somebody's ever going to say is no. And if somebody
Right.
says no, my life is the exact same. So I would just say, if you're thinking something, if you want to try something, go for it. And if somebody
I
says
love
no,
it.
they say no. It's okay. Life moves on. You still have to pay your taxes and your mortgage, and the Jets
Unfortunately.
will still be terrible.
No doubt, man. We thought we gave them the quarterback they needed and it just didn't work out.
Talk
But
about
hey.
something I don't, that's something I don't want to talk about. But yeah,
So
listen,
do
go ahead, go for it.
so along those lines, and I want to kind of wrap up with this. As you look at the future and you look towards more growth, what are you visualizing your path? Is it to raise money and go buy more companies? Is it to just kind of find those partnerships that kind of work and strategically acquire through like an owner finance deal? Or what are you looking at as your path?
Well, listen, we've been lucky enough to be able to accomplish the growth we've accomplished without taking on any debt.
Awesome.
And I like to keep it that way. I think that, I think we have something really good to offer to both clients, to other people, to potential
Yeah.
employees. And I think we have
Yeah.
something to offer. And if somebody sees that and we're like-minded, I think it's run. But
Love
I'm
it.
not looking to force anything either. I think that growth for the sake of growth doesn't make sense, but
Not
growth
all the
for
time.
with, again, like-minded people
Right.
who are going to share the same values, it's a home run.
Love it. Love it. Well, I really appreciate this conversation. I think this brings out a whole different type of growth strategy that a lot of people don't think about. And I think it's an ever-growing conversation given the rate at which boomers are trying to exit their businesses and kind of pass the baton. And I think this is a really, really fun conversation. So thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us. We're going to post all your contact info about your firm. We didn't even talk about your interior design group and your, you know, you got all sorts of really cool stuff going on. I recommend to anyone looking for an opportunity to possibly connect and merge or join forces or align with a group that's got technology moving with them and a culture that seems to be working, check it out. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed that episode. As with all of our guests that we've enjoyed on this podcast, we hope you take a minute to reflect on how relevant was that to your growth journey. How relevant is that to your business? If you are not taking steps to grow and scale your business, chances are you're not growing or scaling. So how do you know if you're growth ready? Check it out at growthreadiness.com. If you haven't done so already, we have a free assessment at growthreadiness.com. That's right, growthreadiness.com. And measure up to see if you truly are growth ready. If that magical amount of funding or that magical client popped into your doorstep today, would you be ready? Could you grow and scale your business with what you've got ready right now? Chances are there are some places you're strong, there's some places you're weak. We let you explore that for free at growthreadiness.com. Click on the assessment at the top right, and we challenge everyone that listens to the podcast to go see how growth ready your business is from your perspective as an owner, founder, operations director, or even a sales manager. Is your company on a path to growth readiness? If it's not, reach out, let us know what we can do to help. We have tons of resources, tons of free stuff, and some really, really high quality paid stuff that's going to help your company reach that level of growth that you hoped it could be on. Whether you're aiming for exit, whether you're aiming for a fundraise, or whether you're just trying to sustain the growth you've already had, go to growthreadiness.com and check out what you're doing and if it's working for you. Thanks for being a part of the Growth and Scaling podcast. We hope all these interviews are helping you determine the best path for your growth and giving you real-world examples of what you could be doing in your business today.